Chapter 3. Mission Time. 6139.21 Tango Zulu. Two of the most vital strategic considerations on Mycenae SETI 6 were the atmospheric composition and the temperature. Despite the relatively bright daytime environment and the orange sky, the air temperature on the upper third of the planet's latitudes, including Sector 118, topped out in the 40s. The unusual weather was largely due to three interconnected but failed attempts by both SARN and Yersian expeditionary forces to terraform the system's sixth planet in order to obtain access to rich deposits of trilluminum and the ice found in the northern latitudes, due to the fact much of it contained deuterium. Both alien governments ran out of personnel and funding long before they got through the first phases of their respective projects, so they left their efforts largely abandoned. One thing they did manage to accomplish was to increase the atmospheric concentration of both titanium dioxide and an unusual hexafluoride compound. Alliance scientists presumed this was an attempt to warm the planet somewhat, even though a world as far from its sun as M-SETI 6 would never be habitable by dragonkind without portable life support. The two atmospheric compounds also made the sky less gray and more orange. The purpose of changing the sky color wasn't immediately clear to anyone studying the situation. From a practical standpoint, however, the surface of Mycenae SETI 6 was partially habitable by humans, but only up to a point. The hexafluoride compound was rather effective at displacing oxygen in an enclosed environment, and the titanium dioxide was a medical hazard due to its effect on human respiratory systems and the difficulty in detecting it before concentrations reached dangerous levels. Those twin safety concerns, combined with the unpredictable weather and the tendency for air temperatures to dive 10 to 15 degrees at random, unannounced intervals, placed a few restrictions on how Skywatch personnel could function on the surface. The most important mechanisms for survival were the airlock and decontamination facilities built into the Oka Firebase's external gate walls. Oka had the advantage of being a relatively new base, built around what started out as deployment of an Iron Keep, only a year before a permanent expeditionary garrison was assigned. The personnel were just half a notch above a landing party with orders to remain on station indefinitely. The starship DSS Green Tower was their fallback. She was an escort frigate, one generation behind Commander Islington's famous ship, docked at the facility's upgraded spaceport on the south end of the complex. Captain Hunter's next act would be decisive. If it were true alien forces were targeting the Oka base gate wall and airlock at the northwest end of the complex, their success in destroying or damaging the specialized decon equipment would trap the surface-deployed Alliance personnel inside the base without portable life support. Argent was still parked in a standoff deployment per Hunter's orders, too far away to offer direct assistance for the time being, and unable to launch close air support until the landing parties were able to provide the XO with some kind of target coordinates. Both Hunter and O'Malley would agree launching fighters or paladins into several thousand cubic miles of potentially radioactive soup on the off chance they might find the people and equipment they were supposed to be defending wasn't Sound Strike Battleship doctrine. Opening fire into the same brownish-gray cloud wasn't likely to be considered prudent either. It was up to the landing party. If Zoni was correct about her warning regarding Hunter's chief engineer and medical officer, two of the captain's most irreplaceable comrades were only a few yards from one possible breach point. Alien attackers were inside the gates. They could break through the outer defenses anywhere and at any moment. The primary airlock was on the outer edge of a circular structure called Dome Blue, along the northwest corner of Oka Base. The decon facility was one layer deeper into the complex. Cryogenics was in the center of the structure. The laboratory and stasis array were vital to base operations. They contained equipment that allowed medical personnel to use extreme temperature therapy, combined with finely tuned electrostatic field generators to counteract the effects of titanium dioxide contamination. The lab was originally going to be used to flash freeze biological samples collected by the crew of the Green Tower. It wasn't until a bright young graduate student discovered the particles in the atmosphere reacted strongly to attenuated magnetic bursts that a whole new field of science blossomed in the most unlikely of places. The problem, from a tactical standpoint, was the fact the lab was protected by nothing but huge bay windows built along the circular walls containing the lab equipment. Hunter believed the only way to make the place a better target would be an arrow and some flashing lights. By the time the captain and Mu arrived at Dome Blue, the base general alarm had been sounding for at least 3 to 4 minutes. Indeterminate thumps and crackles were still audible outside the complex, but there were also glimpses of subdued light and the ever-present white noise of the windstorm passing overhead. It just wasn't possible to fully discern exactly what was going on. Were the enemy forces mustering for another offensive? Meanwhile, in the back of his mind, Hunter was still processing the fact one of Kamanov's classified weapons had apparently activated. But since the initial messages, nothing had happened. All Hunter could conclude was he and his team really were on their own. They had about 100 men assigned to the base, roughly 70 of whom were the equivalent of civilian technicians and specialists. Hunter stopped in the open bay between Dome Blue and the corridor leading south to the central control station. Mu was right behind him, weapon at the ready. The captain activated his comlink as he watched the bay windows of the visible half of the lab for movement. Hunter to Doverly. Acknowledged? Hunter breathed a quiet sigh of relief. Whatever was happening, it hadn't reached his doctor or engineer yet. Status? We're hunkered down inside the lab. We have two assistants with us. One is armed. Do either you or Yili have a way to get out here to the South Passage? Negative. The only exit from the lab faces the airlock. We're reading at least 12 life signs outside the gate wall. 4 of them arrived in the last 60 seconds. Demolitions team, Mu said quietly. They need to move now. Either that, or they need to take cover. Hold your position, Doctor. We'll come to you. Before Hunter or Mu could advance, the entire interior volume of the facility flashed with orange light and then lost power. A second barrage of alien charges detonated. The containment structures around the decontamination facility shattered and spun in every direction. A dense cloud of acrid smoke spilled into the dome interior. Shadows moved in the confusion. Zoni was busy trying to comprehend the size of the attacker that had just crashed to the command center's floor. Were it upright, it would stand at least 9 feet tall, and by the sheer volume of its unusual armor, she guessed it must have weighed 300 to 400 pounds. The commander heard the explosion and the crash of debris as it tumbled down the southern passage. She ran out the egress doors and stopped to consult her handheld. From her position, she would need to move roughly 60 yards north to take up a fire support position behind Mu and the captain. The only problem was, it would leave the control facility unguarded. People over part, Zoni thought. She checked her weapon and was just about to charge into the action when she both heard and felt something like a moving van carrying a load of iron blocks over a cement bridge. It didn't take long to find the source of the noise, since it was getting louder and closer. Zoni turned and almost lost the ability to think normally. Coming towards her at an unsettling speed was an enormous metal ball large enough to fill all the available space in the corridor. It was easily 12 feet in diameter. The center third of its volume was stationary, but the two outer sections on either side were rotating like giant wheels. Right in the middle of its forward-facing surface was a pair of illuminated red eyes that were anything but friendly-looking. Then it spoke in a voice that Zoni was sure made her ribs vibrate. Enemy detected! Rollins Rock Smash! The metal giant stopped roughly 2 inches from Zoni's nose. Its eyes glared. Are you enemy? Zoni shook her head, eyes wide. Her voice almost squeaked. Number. I'm one of the good guys. Computer say you rabbit. Rabbit friend. Rollins Rock only smash enemy. No smash friend. Enemy where? Zoni smiled nervously. The object's voice was like a combination of an earthquake, war drums, and a dinosaur roaring. Rabbit? Northwest? The spherical war machine pivoted on its tracks much like a tank and thundered up the southern passage like a bowling ball that had just escaped a mental institution. It still filled the passage from wall to wall and deck to ceiling. Zoni wondered if its purpose was to just run over everything in its path. If that were the case, once it encountered an army of 400-pound alien intruders, the results were going to be both unusual and exciting, to say the least. On a hunch, Zoni checked her ATMAS. She keyed the captain's identifier. Sure enough, the last message was the notification about the first arsenal weapon activating. Then she did a backtrace on Skywatch personnel computer access. Whatever it was, this machine had apparently identified Zoni and consulted her duty file, which listed the commander's various nicknames. One of them was Yilli's moniker for the Jack of Diamonds. Rabbit with a gun. She looked up in total disbelief. It can't be. Chapter 4. Mission Time 614.23, Tango Zulu. Lieutenant Colonel Lucas Moody could not believe what had just come through the ragged hole in Dome Blue's outer wall. All that was left of the airlock and decon facility lay scattered and burning across the deck. Hunter checked the lab once more to make sure nobody was visible inside, but after that, even he couldn't take his eyes off the juggernaut that had just stomped into view. It was bipedal, but easily half again as massive as even the most muscular human. It wore power armor that looked to be made out of some combination of gray ice and deep midnight blue stone. The whole ensemble looked tribal. Behind it were four more. The captain was certain they were all bigger than the first. All were carrying gigantic rifles dripping a steamy liquid of some kind. Mu acted on instinct and leveled his TK-40. Three shots whispered through the smoke. Light strobed down the hallway. All three shots were direct center of mass hits on the lead attacker. Its armor deflected the first two shots. The third knocked it back. It wheeled and fell. The entire facility shook with the impact. Hunter took aim. His eyes widened as he realized he wasn't going to get a shot off in time. The second huge attacker leveled its own weapon and fired. A spiraling bolt of power sliced across the room and crashed against the bulkhead framing around the entrance to Dome Blue. The metal composite surface instantly froze. Icy energy soaked through the structure and crackled as it supercooled the air around the impact. The cloud reached the captain, and he lunged backwards, not quite avoiding the painful frost. Mu fired a fourth shot to cover the captain's withdrawal. The two officers turned to find a new firing position, just in time to witness an oncoming multi-ton force of nature accelerating right at them. What the? Hunter barked an instant before Mu caught him and threw him to the deck. The Marine officer held his rifle with white fingers and knuckles as the energy of six freight trains roared past. Somewhere, a voice like sitting under a stadium announcer's loudspeaker echoed to an altitude of at least 2 miles. Enemy detected. Zoni ran up an instant later. She knew what was about to happen, but had no idea how to manage the situation beyond frantic disbelief. Wait! By the time the Rollins Rock emerged from the southern passage into the interior of Dome Blue, six of the oversized attackers had entered the facility. Decompression alarms sounded. The emergency life support systems fought to establish a magnetic shield across the gate wall breach to prevent the outer cold and contaminated air from filling the structure. Two of the immense slow-moving gunners aimed at the gargantuan sphere of metal, but it was far too late. The Rollins Rock slammed into the first dead-on and then clipped the second. The momentum threw the giant humanoid-shaped block of power armor back as if it had been snagged by a hook connected to an overflying aircraft. It punched into the northern wall and slumped, head buried 4 feet deep in the Dusamite composite surface. The Rollins Rock spun its tracks in reverse, knocking a third attacker off its feet. It pivoted approximately 40 degrees to port and exploded forward again, crashing through the squad of armored gunners like it was picking up a 5-pin spare in the Milwaukee quarterfinals. An instant later, the enormous war machine smashed an even wider hole in the outer wall and was gone. Only Zoni could hear its voice now. It shouted, "Enemy detected," once again, and then the sound faded. All that was left in the interior of the dome was debris, smoke, and a cavernous hole in the outer wall, which had finally been sealed by emergency shielding. Zoni knelt to check on the captain. Hunter's arm and two of his fingers were cold and gray. It was clear by his manner moving them was less than comfortable. Zoni activated her comlink. Doctor, the captain is injured. The reply came back almost instantly. Acknowledged. On my way. A deep thudding sound filled the passageway. The entire structure lurched several inches and shook. Then another crunching sound preceded another even more violent spasm that caused one of the southern passageway's support rings to buckle. The hell is going on? Mu exclaimed. It's underground, Zoni said quietly. The rock is still fighting them. I can hear it. The mayhem quieted abruptly. All three officers listened. All they could hear was the doctor running towards them. A moment later, all three Argent officers noticed their comlinks light up simultaneously. Someone had gained access to the base command net. Rock destroy enemy! Rock destroy hunter! There was a soundless moment of confusion before Honora arrived and examined Captain Hunter's arm. This is advanced frostbite. What did you do? Stick your hand in a vat of liquid oxygen or something. Hunter winced. It only hurts when I breathe. I'll refrain from finishing that joke, Mu muttered. Any chance we can get some reinforcements so the next time the stone and ice people show up, we have more than one rifle? We have to get you to sickbay, sir, Honora said. This thing needs an antiseptic sleeve, or you're going to start bleeding from 10 burst blood vessels at once. A jolt that easily registered near 6.0 on the Richter scale caused Honora to almost drop her medical scanner. Zoni snapped towards the breach in the dome not far away. Something's coming. Subsonic vibrations. How about a happy story before we all get turned into brightly colored fruit rolls? Mu said, hefting the captain to his feet. The Marine officer pulled Hunter's arm around his neck and started towards the medical wing. Honora followed, watching the captain's injured arm closely in case it started bleeding. Zoni Tixia stood alone in the passageway, right at the edge of the dome blue interior. The jagged hole in the far wall buzzed and crackled as the magnetic shielding fought to maintain the air pressure. The Argent Signals officer could both hear and feel the approaching weight of something beyond imagining. The cryogenics lab was dark and sealed and fortunately undamaged. It was bad enough the facility no longer had a working decon tank. Losing the lab as well would make the entire base virtually uninhabitable. The commander worked feverishly to synchronize her ATMAS and comlink with the giant war machine. She had one key advantage. The rock had added itself to the base command net. That gave Zoni all the information she needed to establish data link. With another 4 or 5 minutes of work, she would be able to access its control mechanisms. She might not be able to give it orders, but at the very least she would be able to persuade it to slow down long enough to coordinate its attack. A shadow darkened the terrain outside the broken airlock. Finally, the Rollins rock appeared again. It powered through the broken barrier. More debris crashed to the deck. It rumbled in Zoni's direction. Rock, find hunter, smash enemy! Rock, wait! Zoni's voice wasn't quite as powerful. She was the only obstacle. Yili and Honora both had rarely missed a chance to point out half-jash, women were incapable of weight gain. In the words of Argent's medical chief, Zoni weighed a buck 10, if that. She was certainly no match for 900 cubic feet of dense battlefield-grade acerite alloy. The war machine stopped only a few inches from the commander. The Argent signals officer swallowed nervously. She had no way of knowing if this mechanism would even respond to reason. But she had to try. Why are you fighting us, Rock? The captain is one of the good guys, too, Zoni pleaded. Man say captain enemy. Rock destroy enemy. What man? Something caused the hair on Zoni's neck to stand up. Man with control box. Man say destroy hunter. Rabbit stand clear. Zoni could feel her pulse racing. There was no time to unravel whatever was going on. What control box? Rock. That man is telling you a lie. Captain Hunter is our friend. He's our commanding officer. What is lie? Zoni's mind raced. On the one hand, she had to defuse this situation before everyone ended up smashed. On the other hand, she didn't want to destroy this machine's innocence by dumping the weight of someone else's treachery on him. It was also hard to ignore the fact she was standing in the way of a weapon the size of an ultra-class dump truck. A lie is when someone tells you something that isn't so. He's making up a story to get you to do something you shouldn't do. Something you wouldn't do. Man with control box is using your honesty against you. There was a pause of several seconds. Zoni could hear the low hum of the battle-hardened electronics inside the rock. It was almost like listening to a heartbeat. Rock sad. Zoni inhaled sharply. The machine's words hit her like cement bricks. She felt tears welling. I won't lie to you. I will always tell you the truth, Rock. Rabbit promise? Zoni tried to smile and almost succeeded. She put her hand on Rock's forward armor plate. Rabbit promise. The machine abruptly spun on its tracks, turning back towards the breach in the dome wall. The big guy was moving again. This time he was accelerating towards the destroyed airlock. He could only be headed for one place, the exterior grounds. Was that where the treacherous man was, or was he under the facility somehow? Rock, destroy man with control box. Smash enemy. Rock, wait! We can fight together, Zoni cried. She ran to follow, only to realize she couldn't exit the structure without exposing herself to the potentially poisonous atmosphere. Zoni stopped short. She had to have portable life support. Moments later, the Rollins rock was gone once again. Zoni fought to control her breathing. She sprinted for the nearest exosuit storage.